Welcome to Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria, with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
A very warm welcome to the Care in Action podcast. Today we are doing an online podcast, just in case that you note some quality issues in the tone. My guest today is the director of Care Egypt, Vivian Tabe. She is based in Cairo. Welcome, Vivian.
Hi, and thank you, Andrea, for hosting me in this podcast. I'm really happy to be with you today.
So are we, and like always, a very short introduction of our today's guest. As I said, Vivian Tabet is the CEO of Care Egypt. She is a passionate leader with more than 15 years of experience in humanitarian aid, specializing in gender justice and women's empowerment. From her early work in rural women's rights programs to leading initiatives against violence and for economic inclusion, she's built transformative partnerships with communities and also with governments. And I can share already that also Care Egypt and Care Austria are at the moment building a hopefully transformative partnership. So I'm very much looking forward to join forces with Care Egypt. And let's start immediately with my first question. So in the preparation for today, Vivian, I saw that your experience in humanitarian work, this is not a big surprise, it started in rural Egyptian communities. Can you tell us a little bit more about those early days and what shaped your idea of fighting poverty?
Yeah, you remind me with very dear days to my heart. When I started in development 1992, more than actually 30 years, not 15 years, which it make me happy to look younger to our, to people who are listening to this, but let me be honest and straightforward. I started the journey 30 years back, and I remember when I started in the garbage collector center for people, poor people living in a slum area. It was a special poor garbage collector. And when I start to understand what development means since that time, I were as if I am seeing the community for the first time. This is my early beginning and my first steps in understanding and articulating the inequality which I felt as a girl or as a woman living in Egypt. You can feel it from your childhood, but to articulate it in some practical life experience was started in my beginning in development work.
Okay, let us step back for 1 or 2 minutes. Were you born and raised in Cairo?
Yes, which where I was in privilege because I were living in the city. But however, Nana, I was living in a city, but the unequal treatment between girls and boys, it was noticeable for anyone, especially for girls who were suffered from this different treatment in domestic sphere or in public sphere from your early days. You can notice and you are not having the same treatment as your brother or as your peers, male peers.
Did you also experience that as a child? I mean, it's not a secret. We are the same age. And yes. Austria, as you saw, is also a quite traditional country. And when girls grow up, women of my age nowadays, some of them experienced at home also a certain difference between the brothers and being the girl at home. So I was the one child. I didn't experience that. But one of my colleagues in school, she always told me that she had to help the mom clean the kitchen and things like that, and her brother never touched anything. So yes, how was it for you as a girl child?
Similar as you have mentioned, and we have different roles and responsibilities, which gave you a limited space in everything. As you mentioned, as an example, I was having this in my family, and I have, as a girl, I have some tasks I need to handle, like cleaning houses or cooking. But my brother, he was the youngest, but he has different duties, like buying groceries from outside, going out and buying things and bring it to us who need to handle it in the inside the house. Late hours and what is allowed for us to do, and what is allowed for the male brother and peers to do. Even with living with in a city or living in with a not conservative family, doesn't mean that you will be allowed to do or to have the equal treatment between boys and girls.
And did it change a lot when you compare nowadays, or maybe your own family, and back to our childhood? I would say it changed in Austria, but we see a backlash now, even that women get more traditional again and redefine some of them. Of course, you can never generalize, but we see a backlash. So, which is also something noticeable somehow, right?
What gave me hope is that in a situation are changing positively. And that make me able to continue, because it's a journey. And I believe in looking back to 10 years back, as an example, when we were dealing with sexual harassment, as an example, in the streets. Egypt is one of the countries where sexual harassment were very common in the streets, and people even refused to talk about it. And I remember when we started our Safe City model 10 years back, when we have done the baseline survey, and we found that over 90% of women and girls who are living in the slum areas in Cairo facing daily sexual harassment in the street, we could not announce the result of the baseline, because it will be a huge surprise for communities to hear that. But now, when I hear people talking about sexual harassment and use the term of sexual harassment, where it become a common term now, it's a criminal and a criminalized act, and it has been criminalized now by law, and people to name it as a crime, as a sexual harassment crime. Now it's a great progress. I could not imagine to reach it after 10 years. For this type of progress is the fuel to the journey, our journey to belief and change and transformation is possible.
Do you see a general appetite in the Egyptian civil society for change when it comes to gender equality?
I think what is the most important for us as a civil society working with women and girls and keen to improve their status, not the civil society appetite, but the political will. And I believe in now we have the great opportunity to have a very supportive government and very supportive president. Actually, the main support is coming from the president, who is pro women, and who is very supportive to women files and women challenges, and that encouraged us a lot, and gave a real opportunity for women rights and the civil society organization to act and to benefit from this critical moment, and where there is a political will to improve the status of women in the country.
Yeah, this is really excellent to hear, to be very honest, because Egypt is rich in population, right? And it's not only out of altruism to work on gender equality. It's sure also important for economic reasons, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And I think this might also be a driver for political leaders to support gender equality. It's in their own interest also of the country. It's the human rights side and it's the economic side, right?
Yes, yes.
Can you frame in a few words what Care Egypt is focusing on? Because nowadays you're working not only in Cairo, in poor regions of Cairo, you also work in Upper Egypt, right? Can you frame a little bit what you are doing as Care Egypt, that our listeners get an idea?
As part of CARE International, working in the country for more than 70 years, we are committed to poverty alleviation. And through all of our programs and interventions, we are putting the poverty issue as a cross-cutting issue we need to resolve in our country. But we are focusing on three main thematic areas. Women rights, and when we are talking about women rights, we are concerned to stop gender-based violence or violence against women and girls. We are very concerned with mainstreaming economic opportunities and to facilitate women access to their economic rights, including even as a some rights like inheritance rights, and here maybe we need to flag the huge success we together with Care Austria have achieved, a great success when our joint project with Care Austria 2011, when we start to talk about inheritance rights. And here maybe we need to flag, you know, I remember when we were starting talking about inheritance rights in Upper Egypt, it was the first time to open this taboo, and
because women were not able to inherit, right? Girls,
yes,
did not inherit.
Women did not inherit. They are not even allowed to ask for their inheritance, and sometimes in women's rights issues, we are using the religion as a reference to continue practicing some of harmful practice. In Egypt, we are Muslims and Christian, and the majority are Muslims, and both religions are supporting women inheritance rights. While in practice, no one is talking about the women or women inheritance rights or supporting women to access their inheritance rights. And in this joint project, we successfully were able to provide 1,000 women of their inheritance rights, but the most successful part was ratifying an article to criminalize denial of women inheritance rights. Back to what we are doing in the country, we are also keen to empower women through providing a empowerment opportunities for leadership and for their voice to be heard, and to ensure the quality of education, to ensure youth having their equal spaces to participate and to be empowered and to be linked with a labor market, and in agriculture, because we are agriculture country, we are for sure focusing on climate change and how we can support our small farmers to be able to deal with all the climate change consequences on their crops and in their sector.
As a matter of fact, yesterday I read in an article, and I just mentioned it because I think there are some similarities, maybe, that's what I want to find out, that in Bangladesh they see an enormous backlash on female rights, in spite of the fact that women leaders were really crucial when they had their last big government crisis, and when they got rid of their former president, which the majority of the civil society supported. And women and girls were really strong fighting for their rights in this phase. Now they see an enormous backlash. Pre-elections are ahead, and they see that women do not play any role any longer. So when you think back, I mean, the Arab Spring started in Tunisia, right? In 2010, yes. If I'm right. And it spread then very soon to Egypt. And you also talk about sort of post-revolution, right? February 25th. And also, when I remember those pictures, there were enormously many young women and also older women fighting and being part of this movement. So do you think that Egypt was maybe also with the support of the government able to keep this momentum that we all saw and have in mind, that women are still relevant and on the forefront?
I believe that we are continuing this flame because it started by then when women felt and they and their families are facing a real risk, and they are at risk. Because I remember after the revolution when Muslim Brotherhood were dominating the regime, even the constitutional gains for women were under threat. The laws ratified was under threat because they were voted under rediscussion, and that meant by that time, and we were not only will not gain any more gains, but we are at threat to lose even the gains which is in our laws and in the procedures and in the constitution even more. And I remember in that time, women felt and we have to define our families, our life, and our rights. And I believe in that we continue building on this this movement, let's call it movement, we are trying to build on it and continue having this active part and our active role. Maybe sometimes it will go down with all of the economic challenges the country is facing. In Egypt, in a very hot area and surrounded with many crises, which even make it more difficult for us to enjoy a sustainable or suitable economic status. But we are struggling from different angles. We are receiving many millions of refugees in the country, which add to our economic burden.
Do you think that Care Egypt and its work is creating something like role models for others, that they can see, yes, this can work? And second question, don't you think that you are a role model as well for many young people in Egypt?
Well, let me remember a very dear story to my heart. When we start for the first time using different tools, different interactive non-traditional tools like community theater. And I remember when we started to use this untraditional tool in our intervention in one of our regional projects, we even didn't find someone to train people on community theater. But after the project ended with many years, we find all people are using, all civil society are using now community theater as one of their main intervention. And the finding our graduates use as a trainer hired by National Council of Women and National Council of Childhood and Motherhood is make us used to be, to make us very proud. And we are creating a model and promote it and for others to use it and to start to use it for having this rebel effect to one of our projects.
This is really an enormous success. And talking about community theater to spread information, to tell daily stories that people really can connect to, I think this is really a wonderful tool. And to hear that you adapted it for the Egyptian context is even more interesting, because I think it also has a sort of, not only the messaging, but it's also a sort of, at least my impression, a sort of fun factor for the women and girls participating in it, right?
Yes. And we're really proud after implementing this type of intervention and to find others talk about it. And I remember when I were in a visit to National Council for Childhood and Motherhood, when they tried to tell me how community theater is effective. And we had in this visit one of our partner, she laughed and she told, by the way, the one who started community theater in Egypt was CARE. Don't try to tell them about the community theater because they brought it to the country. We were happy to reach this point of promoting one of the tools which actually for us were a breakthrough in our intervention in very sensitive topics like women's rights using community theater. Yes.
Now, this is really also a big motivation to all of us who are working for CARE in Europe, in the European context and setting. Let us stay a moment, because this is a big breakthrough, but still, you're working in a field that is still in many contexts male dominated. And sometimes, and you also told me when you were in Vienna, it's not that easy to raise certain gender related issues in your, in any context, but especially we are talking now about the Egyptian context. And if we think about the regions outside Cairo, still, more traditional and for sure than the big cities, how do you deal with, this possible cultural clash that might happen if you introduce something innovative that was not the habit beforehand?
I believe in from experience and from CARE learning, we have to intervene with a comprehensive approach. As you know, in CARE, we believe in women empowerment or gender empowerment framework is a triple intervention. We have to work with agency, we have to work with women, but that this solo intervention will not work unless and we combine it with work with community to deal with structure and to deal with power dynamic. And third component should be laws, regulation, and harmful practices, which are embedded in the culture.
How important is it to work with men and boys? So I think they are included in community effort, right?
Yes. Well, you have you have raised a very big component on our community work, which is engaging men and boys. And engaging men and boys to balance power dynamic in community and in domestic sphere is one of our critical intervention. And let me tell you my personal experience. When I joined CARE, I was a project manager for first project in CARE Egypt. By that time, we CARE International working in Egypt, tackling women domestic violence. Violence issue. And by that time, it was 2007, we were focusing all of our effort on empowering women and raising their awareness. And we felt and we are as if and we are having a balloon, because you are keeping pushing information about rights for women. And she returned back to her home, dealing with the man who are totally neglected from this story, and continue practices the same practice he used to do, and what his community is supporting. We are even making the problem more by having this huge gap between the practice, the community acceptance, and what women are aware or to what women were introduced to. For engaging men and boys is critical, and we have a very positive experience because we even felt because we are living and working in an Arab culture, and not everything will be accepted. We have this awareness about our context, and we tailored our own with specialized psychologists and psychiatrists. We had them tailored CARE experience in engaging men and boys to be accepted in our context and to be tailored to our context. And we have produced two manuals, one focusing on prevention and one for intervention, one for teenager and one for men. And we since that time, we are integrated working with women in all of our work with engaging men and boys for any intervention with women and girls.
I think this is an impressive example of how important it is not only to include all parts of any society where you do any intervention, but it also leads us to the next very short topic about localization and how important it is to localize tools and to contextualize any tool that you use anywhere in the world to the local context. And this is not done by specialists from Europe, the US or Canada, or you name it. This is done by people from the country, from the ground. And this is why CARE is a sort of champion in localization, not only of own parts of the organization, like in the case with CARE Egypt, which is a completely independent CARE organization. We are very proud of that. We have also other colleagues who are completely localized in the meantime. But we are also championing the good collaboration with local partners, right?
Yes. Well, I believe in the first step is to confess and to be honest with ourselves. And we are in a journey. We are in a learning journey. No one knows what it means and what it takes to support localization. And we, being open to learn and to modify and to continue learning is the key for supporting localization and to know what it exactly needs to support localization. And let me here use this opportunity to grade what you have and adore what you have done in this partnership. By thinking as a North organization or North part in this confederation, to knock doors of Global South entities like Care Egypt and to start to think about joint forces with Global South. It may be less challengeable to partner with another Northern organization, member in Care. But you knocked our doors to supporting localization and thinking about who could be in need to this partnership.
Thank you, Vivian. Care Austria definitely is more than ready for starting and diving deeper into this learning journey. And let us finish with a topic that we can't spare in such a podcast. And I'm sure that many of our listeners are thinking, why do they not talk about the biggest issue in the Middle East, which is for sure the crisis, the war, the situation in Gaza? We touched briefly on it when you said that Egypt has to deal with billions of incoming refugees from neighboring countries, because the position of Egypt is really in one of the most sensitive political areas worldwide, I would say. And for the Care Confederation, Care Austria has the lead in providing eco-funding for the whole Middle East, which is also a driver to establish this additional partnership, because I really have the idea that joining forces with Care Egypt might help us in the Arabic context in general when it comes to, are we legitimate in what we are doing? Are we relevant in what we are doing? So Care Egypt has been at the forefront of responding to regional crises, and I mentioned it, the spillover from Gaza, but not only. When now many listeners hear what we have discussed, so what would you say would be the appropriate thing to support the people in Gaza without being on the ground yourself? Because this is something that all of our listeners don't have the chance to. What can they do if they want to get engaged? What do you think?
Yani, let me here start by telling the story. We, as you mentioned, we are surrounded with many crises. We have Sudan and we have Gaza. And between these two crises, we are receiving millions of refugees, and they are living with us, not in tents. They are mainstreamed in host communities. And one of the first issues they are facing when they are coming is suddenly the children are out of schools, and they are trying to catch what they will organically lose, because they are staying not for short time. They are expected to spend years in the country, and we are receiving many of those children in our learning hubs, spread in two big cities, hosted most of the refugees, Alexandria and Cairo. And let me tell you one success story for one of our refugees. And I will use different names. I know his name, but I will not share it. This young child was raped in his country, and he came with trauma to Egypt. And he started to come and visit our learning hubs. He used to be silent, and he used to come with his mother. And his mother continued trying to support, but he came with this trauma after the being a GBV survivor. And he started to join some of the different classes we are offering to children. And I were attending celebrations for graduates from catch-up classes 2 weeks ago. And this boy, same boy, he was traumatized, almost silent most of the time. He even couldn't talk, but his mother don't stop from trying and keep trying to encourage him to join the classes. He was succeeded to pass catch-up classes and succeeded to apply for the certificate, online certificate from his embassy. And we were celebrating the graduation of this boy, where for the first time we heard from his mother his success story. And he was standing beside his mother, very proud about himself, very happy about the achievement he achieved, and the certificate he was hanging to prove, and he will be able to continue, and he will be able to come over this trauma he faced, and this type of success stories which make us able to continue. And we are seeing the huge need we are currently witness, not only on our border, but in our different communities, and Palestinian and people who are coming from Sudan, who are mixed now with our citizen in different areas in Cairo and Alexandria. We see the needs, and we continue to offer support for sure. Government will not be able to cover all of these needs. Unfortunately, the shortage in fund is a big challenge for us and for many other NGOs to continue supporting. But we keep seeing the needs, and we keep seeing the opportunity to meet this type of needs through different intervention which we can offer.
This is really a perfect description of what interventionists can contribute to make some young lives easier. And the answer to the question I asked my colleague Vivian is very easy, dear listeners. If you want to support CARE, then you make sure that many young children can have the experience of having a better life, having access to education, and having a certificate of their achievements in their hands, which is really the basis they could start from into something like a better life, no matter what they experienced as refugee children. So please don't be fatigued, don't turn away. Please get active now and support the humanitarian work of CARE. Thank you, and a big thank you to Vivian Tabet. You were a wonderful podcast guest. Thank you, Vivian. Bye.
Thank you, Andrea. Bye.
Thank you for listening. This was CARE in Action, the podcast by CARE Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For more information about CARE and our projects, visit care.at. There you also find out how you can support our work. This podcast is made possible with the generous support of CC Real. Thank you for your commitment, which enables this series of conversations. See you next time.